We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man. I'm 40.
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo.
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in his office, the one, the only, my co-host, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, Ty. I was just a few minutes ago clearing... I hope this isn't too graphic. I was clearing the snot out of the solid baby's nose.
Okay.
It was a bit snotty this
morning. Has already taken a turn here on our worldwide Saturday recap.
Thank you. I was cleaning out the snot and I said to myself, self, there has to be a forced metaphor here that I can use for the show in a few minutes. And now I'm thinking it was kind of snot away Saturday.
Snot away Saturday.
Yeah. A lot of teams either got the snot knocked out of them or cleared some snot out that really sort of set them on a good place, on a good path for the rest of the season. That, you know, they were a little stopped up, a little congested, Ty, and they just needed to knock a little bit of that oozy stuff out of their system to get ready for the rest of October and November. And so that's the force metaphor of the day, thanks to the solid baby. Snot away Saturday. And now you can give the proper information and we can hear from the people.
I eagerly await which teams fall into this snot away category.
Thank you.
I eagerly await it.
They either got the snot knocked out of them by somebody else.
Right.
Or they themselves. I don't know how closely you watch tennis.
Not at all.
But a lot of players are big believers in, you know, you're handed the towel
right
on the baseline. There's a lot of players, namely Andre Agassi, famous.
Sure.
Are big believers in clearing out the system via snot rocket.
I mean, that's an old Bob Davey favorite.
Absolutely it is.
Sure.
So, snot rocket Saturday, whatever you want to call it, I think there's a forced metaphor there.
I eagerly await which teams fall into that category.
Thank you. I'm high Michigan State.
Well, happy Sunday to one and all. Thank you so much for downloading. This is our Week 7 recap. We called it our Worldwide Saturday. Mm-hmm. We will debate whether or not it honored the true spirit of Mr. Worldwide, Mr. 305 Pitbull, the one and only. Thank you for downloading the show. I'm Ty, he's Dan. Don't forget you can find us out at solidverbal.com. You can also subscribe to the show so you get all three shows that we put out during the college football season. You can do so on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast. If you like the show, please let everyone know by leaving a review or a star ranking for the show, Dan. Okay. With all that being said, I feel like with all the action we saw on this week of college football action, we do need to start with our reverbs. So here it is, Week 7 reverbs, courtesy of our friend Ryan. Have a listen.
Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean?
Tua Tagovailoa just killed my Aggies.
This is Seth calling from California.
I'm currently in Fargo, North Dakota, where you said you wish you were. It is blizzard conditions.
Hey, Dan, Ty, it's Sean in Oregon.
Hi, this is Fielding calling from Washington, D.C.
Hi, this is Sarah in Abilene, and I have to say, I cussed so hard in that Baylor game and dropped the F-bomb, and my 20-month-old niece started repeating it for the rest of the day. Totally worth it. Sick and bears.
What's the best part about the Ducks beating the crap out of Colorado on a Friday night? One extra day of Husky Hate Week, Dan.
Dude, if anyone's a dude, it's Alex Grinch. Holy cow.
I would love for CeeDee Lamb to be a dude. Put him on the dude alert, man. So great to have our defense back. It's been a long time as a Sooners fan to actually see a defense that's legit.
Rodrigo Blankenship? More like Rodrigo Blankenshank.
Man, it's just too bad about Georgia. You know, just like the Sugar Bowl where they weren't trying, they didn't get up for that game. Same thing with South Carolina. Man, every time they don't try, they don't get up for a game. It's just too bad for them.
My Georgia Bulldogs ought to be arrested for impersonating a number three team in the nation.
Inside Sanford Stadium, everything hurts, and I'm dying.
Oh, my goodness. South Carolina just went full muskamp.
So at the end of the South Carolina-Georgia game, can we just all agree that both teams deserve to lose and call it a two-way loss?
Indiana's up 35-0. But on the plus side, Rutgers has not one, not two, but no, it's one passing yard.
I am a Rutgers fan, and our quarterback, if you can call him that, just completed 5 of 13 passes. For 1 yard. What am I even supposed to do with myself?
Woo! How about that Joe Moorhead offense? What? They only scored 10 points against Tennessee?
Go Vols.
I just got finished watching one of the worst displays of football I've ever seen. Mississippi State and Tennessee. So from here on out, anytime Mississippi State playing, that's the window of opportunity.
I really appreciate Ty's advice with the window of opportunity. But I've found that my window of opportunity is pretty much always when the Seminoles play.
I love my Seminoles. Other than offense, defense, and special teams, they're having a great year.
I think what we're seeing from Clemson has transcended the neck crack game and is now the unexpected knee pop game that's super loud and almost sounds like a phone book tearing, but feels incredibly good.
I'm at the Clemson Tiger Sports Shop, and there's an Iowa State pullover on the rack. Has Brocktober taken over Clemson football?
Lynn Bowden Jr. just ended the need for a dude watch list.
Dude alert for Lynn Bowden Jr., who is the reincarnation of Randall Cobb.
You can have your Oklahoma, Texas. You can have your Florida, LSU. How about Bowling Green ending a 10-year losing streak against the Toledo Rockets? I'm Ziggy Zumba.
Forgot about crock potting.
The Spartans just got cheese curd deep fried.
Imagine picking against the Gophers in the snow.
Do we need to talk to our kids about a 6-0 Minnesota?
It's time to talk to your kids about Charlie Brewer and the 6-0 Baylor Bears.
This is Brian. I'm a Penn Stater. Panic as hell.
It's 10:30 at night. You know what that means? Time to warm up these Pac-12 after dark. Hot potatoes!
62 points later, I would like to hashtag reconsider Wake.
I just got to add, is Joe Burrow the greatest quarterback LSU's ever had or the best quarterback LSU has ever had?
This is Ed from Baton Rouge. Death Valley is where opponents' dreams come to die. Go Tigers.
All right, there you go, Dan. Wanted to get that out of the way, right out of the chute, because had a chance to take a look at the call logs. We had a ton of calls come in for obvious reasons. There were a bunch of really high-level college football games going on all around the country. What was your general takeaway from what you saw in Week 7, other than the whole snot
thing? I was going to say, do you want
other
me to go
than
through
the
my,
thing. Other than that.
My TED Talk? My big takeaway from, what was it, Week 7? Worldwide Week 7? I came away very happy about a lot. I came away very entertained by a lot. It started for me Friday night, entertained by Oregon, obviously, with my personal fandom there. I was entertained by Clemson's ability to knock some cobwebs off of their performance against North Carolina. We'll stay with Carolina's. I was entertained by the fact that South Carolina was able to overcome injury and not fully take advantage of created turnovers to run away from Georgia, that it was close and we had entertaining field goal stuff. Oklahoma, Texas, Red River was entertaining. A lot of Wisconsin, Michigan State on the Wisconsin side was entertaining. I thought Notre Dame, USC came down to it, which was a fun little twist because that was what, double digit spread?
Yep. I told you that was my lock. Don't go Notre Dame minus the points.
There wasn't a lot of entertainment in Penn State, Iowa outside of, I think, the Penn State defensive line and I guess Noah Cain.
I mean, look, so, don't do the whole preview here. We got a lot
show.
To talk about on this show.
So,
I'm just saying, in general, entertaining?
In
yes?
general. It was almost like a are you not entertained type yeah. Saturday to me.
I think I'm with you. And not to rub salt in the wound of Georgia fans who have been so gracious and supportive of this show. I look at the college football season. I look at years past. And maybe before we got into this whole mode of Alabama and Clemson being far away and beyond most of the competition. And I remember each and every Saturday just feeling that upset potential, feeling like it was out there. Yeah. And that's why, to me, the Georgia loss was so surprising. It felt like they were truly bulletproof to me, which is why this game truly caught me by surprise. South Carolina has had their issues. We could go into this one here as well. South Carolina has had their issues. Obviously, they've been beat up. They were even more beat up in this football game after Ryan Helinski went down. They had to bring their backup in. But it did not at all pop up on the radar for me. We didn't even mention it in our preview show.
I mean, it was a passing mention at the very end, but we didn't preview the game because we figured with Georgia looking like they had, I mean, it wasn't a great offense performance against Notre Dame, but it was against Tennessee and pretty much everybody else they faced this year in South Carolina to their backup quarterback with Jake Bentley going down early in the season. It just didn't feel with the game being in Athens like
right.
a headliner necessarily, and good for South Carolina, even surviving the Ryan Helinski injury. DeCarrion Joyner was nothing through the air for the Gamecocks,
but
pull it out via missed field goals, made field goal, missed field goal, some extremely, and I know this is going to be a shocker, boneheaded Kirby Smart decision-making from the sideline. Jake Fromm was bad. Not all the picks were on him, but some of them were.
Some of them were, and I guess my larger point here is I knew that there would be upsets around college football this season. I did not expect Georgia to be on the receiving end of one of those. Certainly not at the hands of a team like South Carolina.
With a backup and then third string quarterback.
Given the circumstances.
A conversation we had, though, about Georgia was the replacing of both coordinators. And it was promoting from within
right.
on both sides, which I'm never crazy about. And I understand for recruiting and continuity purposes, and they know the players, they know the personnel. It just feels like that's a great opportunity to just change things up and just get a new spark into the program. And there was nothing in the way of sparks beyond, I guess, DeAndre Swift. And what, George Pickens for Georgia yesterday? It was a listless offensive performance.
So here is the lay of the land. South Carolina, 20. Georgia, 17. Georgia, going into this game, was a 20.5-point favorite. And as we said, we kind of gave it a passing mention. It seemed like almost a foregone conclusion, given the way that both teams have sort of looked this year and the fact that it was in Athens. In the end, it is Rodrigo Blankenship, the otherwise unflappable kicker, missing a field goal in double overtime that would have tied it up. Georgia does go down by 3 at home. By the way, sweet, sweet revenge for the listener who gave us the 1-star review for not mentioning South Carolina's win over Alabama back in 2010. I posted it on Twitter, maybe I should post it more for South Carolina people, but good for them. Been a tough season on like 8 different fronts. The schedule has not helped one iota. Just click on the box score, and the thing that jumps out at you is that Jake Fromm threw it 51 times and had 3 picks. Now, all 3 of those went to a gentleman by the name of Israel Mukamu.
Yeah, Mukamu, whatever it is. He is on the dude list, and it includes a pick 6, so the fact remains. South Carolina, able to win how they did, was difficult and impressive all at the same time.
Normally, Jake Fromm's thrown like 25 times a game with no picks.
Sure.
What the stats indicate but do not fully communicate here is how out of sync he was. He missed a bunch of throws. Yeah. He was especially bad on the longer stuff. I don't know if he didn't get a good night's sleep or what. Might have legitimately been the worst game of his career.
Yeah, that's probably true, given that it was at home against an unranked team with a backup quarterback. And yeah, I can't argue that.
And not to oversimplify, but beyond that, South Carolina took away the run. Mm-hmm. They were able to force that really bad outing from Fromm. They turned Georgia over four times in total and otherwise just picked their spots. It just went South Carolina's way, 20-17. What a win.
Yeah, huge. Amazing.
LSU 42, Florida 28, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I had a good time watching this game.
Did you?
I had a great time watching this game because we got to watch Joe Burrow play quarterback. We got to watch Kyle Trask play quarterback. And to a lesser extent, we got to watch Emory Jones play quarterback. It was as complete a performance against a dangerous defense. I know Florida was beat up front, but LSU's offensive line, first of all, did such a good job neutralizing Florida up front in a complete way because, Clyde Edwards-Alaire was so patient and so explosive on the ground, which feels like an afterthought because Joe Burrow in the passing game was so on point. You know, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson both go off and get theirs, but just the how prepared LSU looked on offense. And I know this is not the first or even second game of the season, but damn, was it impressive. It was a fun back and forth. And even Florida, the fact that they were almost just manufacturing first downs and points out of nowhere with not the most explosive offense, but LaMichael Perine had his moments. Kyle Pitts looks like one of the better tight ends in the country, I guess. And again, Kyle Trask is the backup quarterback. Emory Jones is the third string quarterback. He was brought in situationally. And Florida was full on in this game and going back and forth with LSU until the LSU defense finally started getting a ton of pressure on Kyle Trask and that backfield in the second half. I think what Florida scored the beginning of the second half, that was it. That was that. So great, great complete job.
There were a few moments, to your point, after LSU started bringing more pressure, a few Kyle Trask throws that gave you the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, those were scary.
There could have been more, very easily more than just one interception for him in this football game. But I think the takeaway is that Florida is really good. You know, Kyle Trask and the offense played for the most part well enough to win. Now, they needed more of it, but they had the ball for about two-thirds of this game. They actually led by seven halfway through the third quarter. I think a very positive sign for Florida moving forward that they were able to produce on this level against a really good team in LSU on the road at night. On the LSU side, again, my open question all along has been, can we use that Texas game as a measuring stick? The answer was yes. They racked up over 500 yards against a really good defense. They didn't give up any sacks. They didn't commit any turnovers. Joe Burrow missed, what, three passes?
Yep.
Something crazy all game. The offense is real. It's spectacular. It came through in the last quarter and a half when they really needed it the most.
Good Terry Hatcher reference.
You can't come away from this game feeling shortchanged by either of these teams. Obviously, if you're a Florida fan, you want to win. But on both fronts, there's a lot of positivity to take away here.
Can I ask you, that's a question probably best for the twos crews, but we're here anyway talking, so I might as well ask. Can you construct an argument that says LSU is not the best team in the country right now?
That they're not?
Yeah, is there a case against LSU as the most impressive team in the country?
It's not a strong case because they've actually played a pretty tough schedule to date.
Right. So, I'm using a lot of negatives here, a lot of double negatives, whatever. Is LSU the best team in the country, best slash most impressive team thus far through 7 weeks?
They have a claim to that.
I think the answer is to me now with the Texas and Florida wins. Ohio State had the nice, I mean, the Nebraska win looks less impressive, but I think if it's not LSU, it's probably Ohio State. And I'm happy to say, yeah, LSU, you're the belle of the ball right now, for sure.
The three to me would be LSU, Ohio State, and Alabama.
Okay.
I think I have
LSU standing alone.
Yeah. What about Oklahoma? We can go to Oklahoma next.
Oklahoma's right there, too.
Yeah.
They are absolutely right there.
Red River Shootout. Oklahoma wins 34-27 here. I want to know right here now whether we can file away the old pregame dust up for next year's fantasy draft.
Yeah, we can. Oh, these two teams have, there's no love lost, Ty.
No love lost. There was a pregame dust up here. Players were jawing at each other. There were unsportsmanlike conduct penalties.
Horns down was banned.
Sort of issued before the game. There was a threat of ejections all throughout. This was an extremely enjoyable, extremely watchable football game, at least in the second half. Not so much in the first, and also not so much if you bet on Oklahoma here. Had a little backdoor cover by Texas Longhorns. 10-3 at halftime. Clearly a lot more points in the second half. Even though it was back and forth, I never really felt like Texas was going to win here.
No.
Oklahoma was really quick to answer each of those Texas scoring drives in the second half with something of their own, right?
Absolutely. And the takeaway, the on its face, it's like, wow, well, Jalen Hurts was, you know, even though he made a couple mistakes, he had that fumble, he had the pick. He was accurate. He made plays with both his legs and his feet. The actual takeaway to me is Oklahoma, again, ran the ball really, really well. Kennedy Brooks led the way. And over the years, you know, this year it's CeeDee Lamb, but we've seen DeeDee Westbrook, we've seen Hollywood Brown, whatever. And those guys and the, you know, Lincoln Riley, amazing passing. We got the back-to-back Heisman quarterbacks. Oklahoma, when Oklahoma runs the ball, they're just winning. That is the actual secret sauce for the Sooners. And now they're playing defense. Now they're coming up with third down stops. Now they're collapsing pockets. Now they're making open field tackles. What a weird, weird world we live in now where Oklahoma and Oregon, I guess, their defensive improvements are the actual stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a ton of sacks here. What, 9 sacks?
Mm-hmm. Neville Gallimore. Kenneth
Sam Ellinger. Yeah. 9 sacks, 15 tackles for loss, just 310 total yards for the Longhorns. The way that Oklahoma dominated Texas in the trenches had to be exciting if you're an Oklahoma fan.
Oh, my gosh.
That was definitely a testament to what Alex Grinch is trying to do in Norman. And to your point about the Oklahoma offense and running the ball well, Jalen Hurts didn't have his best game as a thrower. Granted, 3 for 3 touchdowns, but
he was fine.
Got the job done on the ground. 17 carries, 131 yards. You mentioned Kennedy Brooks. He was outstanding. Hurts actually led in yardage and had a touchdown on the ground as well. So this is clearly an offense. We've known this for a while now, especially with this new look Jalen Hurts and this new look Oklahoma offense.
Yeah.
They can beat you so many different ways that it's really tough to figure out, as Texas, I think, saw firsthand.
Yeah. Defending the offense is going to be a challenge for everybody from here on out. And make no mistake, CeeDee Lamb was an authority of a dude yesterday against Texas. Yeah. He was incredible. But I don't know if you caught the flea flicker. That Jalen Hurts threw.
It was
one of the most casual dress James Franklin flea flickers. Jalen Hurts hands it off, and the offensive line just sort of takes a step.
It was
back
sort of like a counter. It was like a counter run,
right?
And then turned into a flea flicker.
The pitch back was just sort of like, why don't you throw it? Why don't we just go a little wild and you throw it? And Jalen Hurts was like, me, I guess, and threw it downfield to a wide open, I don't remember who caught it, but it was on a wheel type route, or it was an end around type, you know, all of a sudden he's wide open. So I love a good casual flea. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
We could talk about it perhaps on the Tues Cruise.
Yeah.
But you have to start wondering who in the Big 12 has the ammo to beat Oklahoma. I mean, it could be Iowa State. It could be Baylor. Even both those teams feel like a stretch to me. But
I think it has to be with how Iowa State, even losing the way they did last year, that they did a good job against them defensively for the most part. I think it's
tough,
Iowa
though.
State.
It's tough.
Not with how sloppy Charlie Brewer looked yesterday. I think it's probably the clones.
Notre Dame 30, USC 27. Notre Dame led 17-3 at half and 20-3 after a field goal early in the third quarter. But USC did not quit here, Dan. They came back in impressive fashion. They made it 23-20, Notre Dame, with about 10 minutes left, 10 and a half left in the fourth quarter. Notre Dame eventually gets a touchdown from Ian Book. They go up 30-20, and that pretty much was it. But USC gets the late score, and again, theme of the weekend, 30-27, your final little backdoor cover.
Yes.
Lock of the week, cover. Ty Hildebrandt, what up?
What was your reaction as a Notre Dame fan to this game?
Okay.
Okay, that's a perfectly good reaction.
Notre Dame's what? 5-1. They're headed into their bye week. And what I like about the team is that I haven't sensed any real panic. Not on the road against Georgia when they were behind, not in this one when they were at home against SC and they had a punt in their first couple drives.
Do you sense panic when Ian Chapter has to make a throw downfield? I sense panic.
No, it feels to me like Brian Kelly has instilled a sense of confidence in this team. And I don't know if it's through building up enough talent that they have depth at most positions or what, but I think Pete Sampson hit it best. And maybe it was Twitter. I don't know where it was, but he said it felt like it was a mature team that handled this game about as well as they could have. And I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
Man, I hate this Notre Dame team. Not because they're unlikable, not because they're immature, not because of any of the actual true things that you just said. But if Tony Jones is running for almost 200 yards and you can't find anybody in play action farther than 12 yards down the field, it's unwatchable, the passing game for Notre Dame.
Well, hold on.
Hold on. Chase Claypool has an amazing catch downfield, like the first or second drive, right? Like a nice, beautiful back shoulder play. And then if nothing's open 6 yards down the field, I'm taking off and running.
I know. It's frustrating. That part is frustrating. I will say this, though, and I tweeted it out.
Yeah.
Ian Book looked a little zippier on some of his throws.
Six yards downfield?
A little zippier. No, I'm serious. Longer throws.
Okay.
A little bit more zip than I'm accustomed to.
They have so the threat now of what? It's Braden Lindsay.
Yep.
Who, by the way, Braden Lindsay has track speed.
Track
fantasy
speed.
Fantasy thing.
Fantasy thing. Yep.
He has this amazing 50 some odd yard, what was it, a toss sweep type thing.
Yep.
And you know what? I'm going to credit USC because to say that like Notre Dame's passing game is boring and they're unwatchable is not fair, because I thought USC's corners did a really nice job downfield. Their secondary did a nice job. They defensively hung on, even though they go down, 20-3, and they fight back really well in the second half. I thought Marquise Stepp was a really good watch. And I think, is he from Indiana? I think he's from the Midwest somewhere, possibly Indiana. He was a really fun watch for USC. Keaton Slovis, fearless downfield, which I liked watching.
He looked good.
Really good. Amon Ross, St. Brown, which is EQ's little brother.
Yep.
And Osiris's little brother. I believe that's the other St. Brown. He makes an amazing sort of bobble touchdown catch. And USC, really good fight after going down and was quite impressed. And they were an onside kick at the very end of the game, which no penalty for Brian Kelly. 8 yards out onto the field for an onside
weird.
Kick.
Needs that get
that's
back
how it
coach.
Works now.
Needs
okay.
to get back coach.
It needs a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty re-kick coach as well. But really good for Notre Dame, holding on. And I liked watching Tony Jones a lot. He's a fun running back.
176 on the ground, a career day for him. And outside of that really awesome catch and touchdown by Amon-Ra St. Brown,
yeah,
towards the, I guess, end of the third quarter, not a lot of long stuff for USC. You know, Brian Kelly said in the post game they wanted to take away Michael Pittman Jr. Obviously, a good strategy. He had something like 4 catches for 29 yards. They did a good job of doing that. So I thought I will latch on to what our friend Pete Sampson from The Athletic said and just call it a mature win. They got the job done. I, along with everybody else in the Notre Dame world, would love to see a little bit more downfield, but you take the wins however you can get them. They've got a big one in 2 weeks against Michigan.
Fair enough. Where are we going next?
Penn State 17, Iowa 12, Dan.
Okay.
This is, if you can believe it or not, Penn State's first win over a ranked team on the road in the James Franklin era. And I probably cannot emphasize enough to a national audience how big a deal this is among many fans in the Penn State world who have remained skeptical of James Franklin, even despite the success of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in keeping with the theme of backdoor covers, Dan, Iowa finished with 12 points because they failed a 2-point conversion, which would have made it a 3-point game and covered the 4.5-point spread.
We talked 4, yeah, somewhere in 4, yeah.
As for the game, though,
yeah,
do we have a drive chart?
I'm really sick of doing Michigan State and Northwestern just because now it's just getting really sad. And Iowa's offense is now it's sad adjacent. Sad adjacent. Punt, 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 field goal, punt, punt, touchdown, missed field goal, punt, field goal, end of half, punt, 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 fumble, field goal, punt, punt, interception, touchdown, touchdown, end of game.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you watched it late last night or you're concurrently watching. What was your setup with Notre Dame USC happening at the same time?
I had Penn State Iowa on the laptop, split screen with LSU Florida, and I had Notre Dame on the big 65er.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah. Boring game. A lot of defense. I think it was exactly what we expected. At one point, I was driving home and didn't catch the very beginning of this game. And I don't know if I saw like a different graphic or what, but I'm in a drive-thru at Chick-fil-A and I take a peek over at my phone and I think I see the number 2 next to Iowa's score. And I'm like, ah, not again. We're not doing the 6-4 thing, again. Please. Not again. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the big takeaway for me on the Penn State side was the emergence of Noah Cain. And it's kind of a weird setup here. I don't fully get it. They haven't committed to him yet as the primary back.
True freshman, right?
True freshman. They didn't give him the ball at all in the third quarter, which I don't get the logic there at all. It's obvious he's going to be the guy. If you're Ricky Slade, just go ahead and transfer out now. Save yourself the aggravation. Noah Cain, 22 carries, over 100 yards. He only had something like a combined 35, 36 carries in the previous five games in the year. He looked good. His touchdown with 5 minutes left is essentially what sealed the deal. So if he can sort of emerge as that back, as that complement to Sean Clifford, that makes Penn State all the more dangerous as an offense. Not a great game for Sean Clifford here, but no killer mistakes. And some moments where I thought he came through in a big way in the clutch. So I came away feeling very positive about the Penn State offense, knowing that maybe they've got a running back emerging here. And certainly the defense held a team like Iowa, granted not the best offense, but still a higher level team in the Big Ten to just 12 points.
Fun touchdown for KJ Hamler. He gets what flipped over the pylon, touchdown stand. So way to hold on and play through the contact, everything like that. You're absolutely right. Noah Cain should be Penn State starting running back today, tomorrow, in the next 3 years. It's what he looks like. 3-4 years, whatever it'll end up being. You're right about Sean Clifford. Not making the mistake was probably his biggest win of the day. As for Iowa, they've now managed to score, a touchdown in their last two games against, it was Michigan and Penn State, scoring a combined one touchdown, and that was a late touchdown, right?
Right.
So that's seven straight quarters against good Big Ten teams without a touchdown on offense. It's not acceptable. It's fine if you want to make your son the offensive coordinator, but you better make sure he's real good. It's fine if your son is Kyle Shanahan. It's not so fine if it's one touchdown in eight quarters.
Yeah.
And even scoring, they had one touchdown against Iowa State. Mm-hmm. And Iowa State's a good team. One touchdown. So I don't know what we have to do there. Nate Stanley, by the grace of God, makes this amazing throw. And we have an amazing catch for the touchdown late in the game. Iowa's offensive line, and this is not necessarily on Brian Ferentz, although I think he's an offensive line coach. They got worked.
They did. They couldn't run.
Penn State up front. Talk about Shaka Toney, who I don't know if you thought that was targeting or not. It was reversed, and so he'll be able to play against Michigan.
That was not targeting.
Yeah, it looked like it was a shoulder more than head, but it was close.
It was close.
And the, what was it, Bob Windsor?
Yep.
They were just abusing Iowa in the middle of that line just all day, all night. And the other thing for Penn State, I don't know if you have breaking news ready.
I can play it.
Play it.
Breaking news!
Penn State is the first team to ever have a call go against them. That's controversial with the Pat Freiermuth reversal. I just saw every headline was like, well, I may blobbity blah ref. Like, if we ever have another game, blah, 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 blah. The first team to ever have a bad call go against
them. You're feeling a little feisty today, aren't you?
I'm feeling a little feisty.
You got a little bit more caffeine in you than usual today.
I did make a fresh batch of cold brew.
Okay.
But for Penn State to go to Iowa City, come out with a W, got to feel good about the Michigan game, especially after Michigan Saturday. Good for State, especially on defense.
All right, let's stay in the Big Ten.
Guess who just got murdered?
I forget who we picked in this game. It was clear pretty quickly that Michigan State's offense was entirely overmatched.
Yeah.
And
still in Columbus.
Yeah. The score 38-0 in favor of Wisconsin proves that out. They could not get any momentum whatsoever. Just 7 first downs all game for Michigan State. 149 total yards. Brian Lewerke got yanked in the fourth quarter. Meanwhile, it was Wisconsin's fourth shutout of the year. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised at this point. I don't know.
But no.
They keep playing this way. Another dominant showing. Just seems like maybe we are not giving Wisconsin enough credit for how good they are at this point, especially in seeing Jack Kingcone complete his first 7 passes, miss only 3 all game. They are really good. 38-0 against a really good defense is quite a statement.
So I think their defense has now scored as many touchdowns as they've allowed. I saw that stat somewhere. They've allowed 4
Crazy.
Touchdowns on the season,
Crazy.
And they themselves have scored 4. Jack Cohn lasers, not a ton downfield, but why should he? Everything was working. And even though Michigan State locked in on Jonathan Taylor, I don't know if you saw the end around to Kendrick Pryor, and his stiff arm goes for a long touchdown. Pick nits. You cannot do anything about this Wisconsin team. They were just flat out great. And Michigan State, how much longer are we going to do this? How much longer are we going to do this with Michigan State, where they have a historically bad year? I know there were injuries. I know there were issues last year. A historically bad year on offense in 2018. And then they play Wisconsin, a team that they should be competitive with every year.
Yeah.
Given the defenses that they usually are able to put out on the field. And yes, maybe you're going to give up 38 to Wisconsin. This is a good Wisconsin offense with the best running back in the country. I get it. Score 14 points. Score 10. Score 17.
Well, hey, remember going into the season, we talked at length about Mark D'Antonio's approach to...
I hate the loyalty. I hate the loyalty from some of these Big Ten teams so much.
His approach to trying to fix the offense. And instead of hiring from the outside, he played musical chairs from within. He shuffled up his offensive coaching staff.
It's a no-show job, the Michigan State coordinator position. So the two things can be true at once. Michigan State can be a disaster and Wisconsin can be great. And I think that's what we're talking about here. And Wisconsin's in that conversation. We talked about LSU and Ohio State and Alabama. There's nothing more Wisconsin can do. You talk about they haven't played the full meat of their schedule since they haven't played Ohio State. They beat the Michigan schools 73-14.
Yeah.
We have to give them full credit for that. And they have Ohio State's on the road, and then an Iowa team that doesn't look like it's going to keep up with many decent offenses.
Iowa might score negative points in that game if that's somehow possible.
Nebraska on the road does not look scary. This is a Wisconsin team that, if they don't win 10 games, there are meteors that have destroyed Madison. That's the only explanation.
All right. Minnesota 34, Nebraska 7. Now, Nebraska was without Adrian Martinez. He's still recovering from a knee injury.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's a pretty big missing piece.
Yeah,
definitely a different game if he's in there. But Minnesota would have won this game either way. Like, Nebraska couldn't get anything going on the ground. They didn't have any answers for Minnesota's rushing attack. 322 yards on the ground for the Gophers, led by Hot Rod, Rodney Smith. He had a buck 39. Shannon Brooks, Mo Ibrahim, like a three-headed monster, a legit three-headed monster.
Yeah.
For the Golden Gophers, 34-7, a big resounding win over Nebraska in very weird weather.
Yeah, the offensive success is not a surprise at this point, even though Minnesota has not played. I mean, I'm pulling up their schedule, and their schedule is wonderful. They have the Penn State, Iowa, Northwestern, and Wisconsin to finish out the year, and so it could go downhill real quick for Minnesota. But when you face a team that you are clearly in a position to beat, and you hold them to a touchdown with the backup quarterback, for sure, but if Minnesota doesn't start the year 8-0, something has gone very wrong in Minneapolis.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, something I want to mention quick here.
Yeah.
They're going to be 8-0 when they play Penn State.
Yes, they are.
They're going to be 8-0. That game is on November 9th. Now, I'm assuming that game day will want to go to Tuscaloosa for Alabama-LSU because, you know, that's a huge game.
I get it.
But game day has never been to Minnesota before.
It would be so rad to go to the Twin Cities.
So I would say, go to Minnesota, man. Go somewhere new.
We got to come up with some sort of hashtag, even though we're, almost a month ahead of that game.
Just looking ahead. That's what we do here.
I have such a soft spot now for Minneapolis after we went, and I just, it would be so cool to go.
All right, let's move quickly through the other three Big Ten games. We had Michigan 42, Illinois 25, Indiana 35-0 over Rutgers, and Purdue 40-14 over the Maryland Terrapins.
Yeah, the big takeaway there, that was Jack Plummer, and you heard on the radio, apparently.
I heard it. I did.
That my prediction of, no, he's not Jake's relative at all, just folks,
yep,
calm down. I did see a stat that all 40 points were scored by freshmen for Purdue. So shout out Baby Boilers, mm-hmm, I guess. Tyrell Pigram started this game because of injury issues to Josh Jackson that he suffered, I want to say, against Rutgers. So really nice win for Purdue, who's had a bit of a struggle to open the year.
Yeah, and on the Michigan front, never great to look at the official AP readout and see the headline, quote, Michigan needs late surge to hold off Illinois.
Yeah, I scrubbed through this game prickly quickly, and you're not going to believe this, but Michigan had some fumbling issues.
Yep. Yep.
That led Illinois into this game. And yeah, I guess good for Shea Patterson and Michigan and the emergence of Hassan Haskins. I think was Nico Collins out, I believe. So that's a significant weapon downfield. But this, you should never have, there shouldn't be simulations of Earth that involve Michigan needs a late surge against Illinois.
Yeah, I don't know if that headline is entirely accurate. They played like crap in the second half.
It was 28-25.
It was 28-25. They won. They did have to pull away, but the second half was just rocky. Suffice to say, they'll need a cleaner game next week on the road at night in State College.
Windy game, but come on. It's windy for everybody.
Over in the SEC, Daniel, Alabama 47, Texas A&M 28. This one was less of a crockpotting, I'd say more of a boat race. I've said it about 1,000 times now about A&M. It's all in Kellen Mond. He was pretty much able to get them 28 points against Alabama.
I thought it was a kind of a game. It was a two-touchdown game going into the fourth quarter. I think it was more of a crockpotting than it was a boat race.
No.
If we're going to take a stance on our made-up terminology here. Something seemed a little bit off about Tua. And good for Tua for still looking really good, mostly. It was receivers making plays. The Jalen Waddle catch and run after was incredible. Devontae Smith was incredible. I think just shout out Texas A&M for making Bama's afternoon a little bit dicey and difficult. Shout out Bama's defense for coming to play and shutting down pretty much everything that wasn't Kellen Mond scrambling and extending plays. But yeah, it was a nice pull away late for Bama in, I think, still a pretty tough place to play, no matter what Kirk Herbstreit says.
Mm-hmm.
And good for the Tide.
By the way, speaking of Kirk Herbstreit,
yeah,
I need to make mention of this real quick here.
I know what you're going to talk about. Let's have a conversation.
There is an unspoken duel going on in college football, I think, between Kirk Herbstreit and Brady Quinn for the loudest possible college football suit. And I'm excited. Because I'm thinking, at least within the framework of our little college football ecosystem,
right,
this could be the new Biggie Tupac. Like, we could be looking at a legitimate college football suit beef going on before our very eyes.
And, you know, Ohio State and Notre Dame. So it's the, Laura Quinn?
The Laura Quinn Bowl, yep.
The Laura Quinn, because it's Ohio State on one side with Herbstreit and Brady Quinn, Notre Dame. I think I'm giving the edge to Herbie here.
Even Kenny Mayne on SportsCenter, the late night SportsCenter, referred to Herbie's jacket as, quote, a risky choice.
It was Cherry-esque, Don Cherry-esque.
We're not at the Don Cherry level yet.
No, but he's Cherry adjacent.
But it is getting to the point where we need earplugs to look at the suits.
So it was sort of a maroonish, salmon-y plaid.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
I didn't mind it.
And Brady Quinn, I think, went solid color this week for his part.
Brady Quinn is much more of the, like, super tight European cut bespoke suit, where I think Herbstreit just takes chances more with patterns and shades. I think I like Herbstreit's look better.
I'm excited about what the second half of the season could bring.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
In this regard. Herb Street is, he's a low-key pastel man.
A little bit.
I respect it.
All right. Tennessee 20, Mississippi State 10. This was sort of a homeless man's Penn State, Iowa, wasn't it?
I don't know who that's more insulting to. Mississippi State may have some big issues.
Not a great viewing experience here.
No.
If you're a Vols fan, you're a Vols fan, you force three interceptions, you hold down Kylan Hill, you close out a win after your new starting quarterback gets hurt, and you have to go back to the old starting quarterback who actually looked pretty good when he came in.
Yeah.
But Mississippi State, Dan, we need to have a real conversation here.
Okay.
You've been pretty high on this team.
I know.
You've been pretty high on this team, and I'm here for you if you need support, but I feel like they could be your TCU, and I'm urging you, break up, get out of this relationship, be Miss Independent before it's too late.
I have that soft spot for Joe Moorhead that I figured you'd have as well. Patriot League and Penn State.
I love him. I love him like a brother, but look at the box score. Watch this game.
I know.
This is a rough watch game.
It's an ugly watch.
Do you want to hitch your wagon to this the rest of the year?
No, not really. And it's mostly because all of a sudden, I mean, Tennessee did a very good job against Kylan Hill. I scrubbed through this one as quickly as I possibly could. Tommy Stevens was a nightmare. Garrett Schrader, freshman truths for him on the road. And even with Brian Moore going down for Tennessee, they moved the ball really well through the air. And they spread it out nicely. And he didn't need to do much against his Mississippi State offense. And Tennessee did it. Good for them.
Missouri, 38. Ole Miss, 27. Kelly Bryant did play in this one despite his recent injury scare. You know, Mizzou's looked really solid since that
first place in the SEC East.
Yeah, since that week one loss to Wyoming. They've got Vandy and Kentucky on the schedule before going to Georgia on November the 9th, which is sort of an under-the-radar matchup that isn't getting a lot of play right now, but it's definitely one we should keep our eyes on because I think Mizzou's looked really good.
Yeah, mostly up day for Kelly Bryant. I went through this one very quickly, so I'll try to go through it some more against before the twos cruise. But the story is Mizzou now having to weather, and he was a dude last week, I believe, Cale Garrett, the linebacker. He's out for the year with, was it pec or bicep? Some upper torso situation. He's out for the season. And Ole Miss was able to run the ball. John Reese Plumlee is, you know, Rich Rod's newest toy. They didn't throw the ball consistently well, but well enough. And good for Mizzou. Largely on the ground, getting it done with, and I don't know if I'd ever seen this nickname, Larry Roundtree III. They call him Larry Three Sticks.
Whoa,
Larry Three Sticks, pretty good.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
sounds like Mizzou, a mobster.
In his own way, Mizzou with Vandy, Kentucky, who's now maybe starting a receiver at quarterback.
I want to talk about that next. Yep,
They're on the road against Georgia, but they have Florida at home, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Mizzou schedules in a wonderful 10-win place.
Kentucky 24, Arkansas 20. Dan, let me ask you a real question here. You sort of stole my thunder, but it's okay.
I'm going to give you a fake answer, but yes.
What do you do when both your starting quarterbacks are hurt?
Oh, man. I pray.
You build the whole damn plane out of Lynn Bowden Jr. That's what you do.
He's the new wild cob.
7-for-11 passing, 78 yards and a touchdown, 24 rushes, 196 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. This is a hell of an effort from Lynn Bowden Jr.
Oh my God, that's underselling it. Arkansas is not great. Arkansas jumped out to a lead, and subsequently couldn't move the football through the air at all. And just, Rakeem Boyd, held out to dry, whatever. I love when, and I don't know if it happened in this game. I did not watch much of this game. I assume Lynn Bowden was put in at quarterback because he was a high school quarterback. I assume. I love when a good situation arises when, like, well, you know, the emergency guy played quarterback in high school, and that's where they're turning, and it worked for Lynn Bowden. You mentioned him before the season as somebody you liked.
He was, like, on my dude watch list, yeah.
He came through in such a big, impressive way in Lexington. So, good for Kentucky, who I think, what, they get to 500 with this win, and we'll see.
Yep.
Drive to six continues.
And the only other game in the SEC before we move on to the Pac-12 here, UNLV 34, Vandy 10. Vandy's real bad. Okay.
Vandy's real bad. Make Clark Lee? Vandy alone?
I don't want to talk about this. We're not talking about this right now.
And I think it was the most impressive UNLV road win in some multiplier of years. So, yeah, good for the Rebels.
So I'm going to rip through this very quickly in the Pac-12, and I want you to give me the lay of the land, okay?
I will.
Arizona State pulls one out over Wazoo. Monster game for Jaden Daniels, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Defending Red Box Bowl champions, Oregon Ducks.
Where's my hat?
45, Colorado 3.
Where's my hat?
We had Washington taking like two quarters to get warmed up against Arizona. 51-27, they win. And Utah, 52-7 over Oregon State. What say you, Dan?
Quickly, so we'll start Friday night. Oregon's defense is just incredible. They don't allow a touchdown once again. Stevie Montez is the realest quarterback Oregon has faced this season, and they passed that test with flying colors at home. Short week on the road for Colorado.
Four picks, I think I saw.
Yeah, Oregon was all over the place on defense. They were collapsing the pocket. They ran well. Justin Herbert threw well despite some early drops. Really impressive Friday night win for Oregon. A letdown, obviously, for Oregon State, who has had a nice offensive year, but their defense has been a nightmare. And Tyler Huntley, very quietly, one of the better quarterbacks, not just in the Pac-12, but perhaps in the country this season. ASU, speaking of very good quarterback play, Jaden Daniels, behind a not-so-good offensive line, which I mentioned, full-on dude.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Wazoo is having some big play defensive issues. Anthony Gordon, I think he threw picks in this game, plural.
He had 466 yards and three touchdowns.
Oh, no, he didn't throw any picks. He just had issues.
In a losing effort, need to play that.
That's what it was. But I think the story here is ASU at home, getting it done, coming back to win this game. I was crazy impressed with the Sun Devils. And if they do develop an offensive line, scary, scary, scary stuff. Washington, I don't think they scored an offensive touchdown in the first half. But get it going in the second half. And the story remains if, I was going to say Purple Cutler off the bat, but Jacob Eason remains in a clean pocket and is able to step into his throws a hell of a ball. And now, and we've mentioned this in the past, that they've missed John Ross and an actual go-to receiver over the years. Puka Nacua, file the name away, Ty. P-U-K-A-N-A-C-U-A. Puka Nacua looks to be a full-on dude for Washington, true freshman moving forward.
All right. So, Daniel.
Yeah.
Over in the ACC, Clemson 45, Florida State 14. We're not going to spend too much time on this one.
No.
I'll just say that our friend Nicole Auerbach tweeted out that Clemson seemed pissed off in this game, and I would say that's an accurate depiction.
Yeah.
Clemson led 42-0 at one point. That's when Bud Elliott, our other friend, tweeted out how Clemson was overwhelming the Florida State offensive line, which comes as no surprise to anyone who's seen Clemson's defense and Florida's offensive line over the last couple years, but still quite a statement here to be up 42-0 and to win 45-14.
Yeah, Alex Hornibrook with a bad pick. I know we've said that sentence before, but it's worth mentioning again when he does it. They alternate quarterbacks. They have injury issues. Florida State does. Good for Clemson. Neck crack game, even with Trevor Lawrence not really going downfield a ton. Really good for them to get back on track.
Miami 17.
Yeah, Friday.
Virginia 9. As usual, when the line feels weird, you throw caution to the wind.
Go to it.
You steer into it. I did not. I woke up early Saturday morning with Mama H dunking on me at about 6:30, telling me that I should stop picking games.
Do any Hildenbrandt sleep?
No.
Okay.
We don't sleep.
Okay.
Virginia has now scored 12 points in their last six quarters, which isn't a great look.
No, and I like Bryce Perkins. I know. I mean, they can't run the ball that well, but good for Miami. Kind of an ugly day, but they get a couple big plays from both KJ Osborne and DJ Dallas, and they hold on. Good, you know, good for the Canes at home Friday night.
Louisville, 62, Wake Forest, 59, Dan. Are we going to go with hashtag reconsider Wake after this one?
No, just consider Wake's offense.
Wake's
offense, yeah.
This was the second highest scoring game in the history of the ACC. A hell of a rally by
regulation,
Wake.
We should point out.
Regulation. In regulation, yes. Important side note.
Unbelievable.
Wake was down 21 with 9 minutes left in this game. They ripped off 28 points in the fourth quarter, but they couldn't stop Louisville. Huge game for freshman Evan Conley, who came in for an injured McHale.
Thank you.
Cunningham in the second quarter. Louisville wins again 62-59. And I just saw on Twitter as we're doing this game, our friend Bill Connolly, now over at ESPN, says that per the SP Plus, Louisville has a 78% chance of finishing bowl eligible. That'd be a nice story.
Whoever is developing these quarterbacks at Louisville has done an unbelievable job. You're right. Evan Conley, who was, I believe, committed to App State, then followed Scott Satterfield to Louisville, was unbelievable in relief early. And then Jamie Newman leaves the game. Sam Hartman, who has obviously started games for Wake, comes in. I saw four quarterbacks with multiple touchdown passes in the same game. Hell yeah. You know what? Good for Louisville. For year one that we thought was going to be pretty rough after what they look like in whatever the final year of Bobby Petrino was last year. Good. I mean, yeah, you mentioned the bowl eligibility thing. That's a real thing. Des Fitzpatrick is one of the great unsung receivers in the ACC and has been for a while. He has a great game. And Chaz Surratt's little brother. Am I right? Am I wrong on that?
Sage Surratt.
Sage. But they are related. This isn't a Jack Plummer, Anthony McFarland situation.
I don't know for sure, but how many Surratts could there be?
How many could there possibly be? I'm looking it up as I mentioned this. But yeah, a super fun, weird game. And once again, good for the Cardinals.
Good for the Cardinals. All right. Elsewhere in the ACC, very quickly, we had NC State 16, Syracuse 10.
He is Chaz's brother.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
We got to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
NC State 16, Cuse 10, Virginia Tech 34, Rhode Island 17, and Duke 41, Georgia Tech 23.
Yeah. After the Thursday-Friday twosome of 16-10 and 17-9, it was a lot of like, why are we watching the ACC? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
What is happening? Georgia Tech with some life on offense, especially on the ground, but Duke is just overwhelmingly competent. And Ryan Willis is replaced as Virginia Tech's starting quarterback against Rhode Island. Hendon Hooker, I want to say redshirt sophomore, something like that. He comes in and has a nice day for the Hokies. And those are all of my opinions about the week in the ACC.
Let's close it out with the Big 12. We had Baylor 33, Texas Tech 30. This one went to double overtime. Over 1,000 yards in this game, but yeah, none more important, Daniel, than the 89 that my boy Charlie Brewer engineered. An 11-play game-tying drive in the waning seconds of the fourth quarter, and he made some early mistakes, but leads the Bears down to the 2. He turns it over to John Mears, who delivers the heartbreak warfare to tie the game at 20-20 and send it to overtime.
Yeah.
And then Baylor won. That's all I had.
Yeah, it was the redeem yourself game for Charlie Brewer after the picks and the what's the dumb and dumber quote? That's what it was. Just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, couldn't throw any more picks, you go and do something like this, like the drives at the end that Charlie Brewer had and completely redeemed himself. So nice win for Baylor in an ugly fashion. Good. Win your ugly games. I'm okay with that. Jamichael Hasty running in the ball at the end. Denzel Mims, I don't know if you saw that catch.
Oh, yeah.
With his toenails on the, you know, the blades of grass, blades of green grass or turf, whatever, next to the sideline. So good for Baylor pulling it out and an impressive performance all the same from Texas Tech, especially on the ground against Baylor's defense.
We're going to find out how good Baylor really is. They're 6-0. We'll find out over the next 6 weeks or so.
Who would you take? And I don't know if you can do this in your system, whatever you have on your computer. Baylor, Minnesota on a neutral field?
I would take Baylor.
I know you're against Minnesota.
I'm not against Minnesota, but I think I would favor Baylor a little bit more because of their offense.
I don't know. The way Minnesota's running and how Baylor's rush defense looked yesterday, I think it's pretty tight.
On a neutral field, right now, it would be about a pick 'em between those two. So
pick 'em.
Pick 'em, yeah.
And you picked Baylor. Okay.
I'll pick Baylor, yeah.
Really nice win for Iowa State, just in mentioning Big 12 things that happened, because I think there were a number of teams that were off yesterday. It was Breece Hall, I believe, who steps in, and we talked about Noah Kane stepping in and looking like the dude for Penn State. That's what it's starting to look like for Breece Hall and Iowa State, and they sort of pour this one on late against West Virginia and do a really nice job against the Mountaineers defensively. An ordinary Brocktober Saturday for Brock Purdy, at least by his standards, but good for the Clones as they, I think, move to 4-2.
Elsewhere, very quickly, we had Boise winning 59-37 over Hawaii. Hank Bachmeier got hurt in this one. Chase Cord, I think is his name, came in and had a pretty good game.
Chase Cord comes in. Also, what the solid baby loves to do to get himself possibly injured. Loves chasing cords, Ty.
Good one.
Just yanking.
Good one.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was workshopping that one in the clubs all morning. Otherwise, really nice day for Malcolm Perry and Navy. There's a few teams, a few group of five teams where it's like a don't look now situation. Because Tulsa's been feisty and Navy just hammers them. San Diego State is now 5-1. You mentioned Boise. There was a couple of other teams. Air Force, don't look now. Air Force 4-2 and just laid the wood on Fresno State. So Army, don't look now, might not be very good.
Okay.
Might have followed up last season with a not so good year. This year, they get completely shut down by a Western Kentucky defense that I don't think is that great, but, you know, open to being wrong. You mentioned UNLV and their nice win. Nevada, Malik Henry, if you remember all those years ago, was like the number one overall quarterback for Florida State. He comes in for Nevada, who's had a nightmare of a season. And he has a couple picks, but makes some big throws. Fine. I think he walked on to Nevada after he was on Last Chance U. So kind of an interesting, I assume, final chapter for Malik Henry and Nevada in a winning effort over my San Jose State Spartans. Tulane, very quietly. I mean, it's UConn, but they moved to 5-1. South Florida, a team we've been watching as like, is the bottom going to fall out? They beat a BYU team that has been pretty feisty this season. Marshall's a team we talk about liking, how they've held it close against a couple of interesting teams. They win over ODU. Bowling Green beats Toledo. Bowling Green might be one of the 5 to 8 worst teams on the FBS level, and they kind of comfortably handled Toledo. Didn't see that coming. So, you know, good for Bowling Green is, what are they, the Falcons?
Something like that.
I have a Bowling Green shirt. I should know this. I think they're the Falcons. Houston puts up a lot of big plays on Cincinnati, but the Bearcats are able to hold on thanks to a nice day on offense from Cincinnati going to Houston and getting that win. Temple, I think we both took.
We both took Temple.
A home dog.
Good game. They win 30-28 over Memphis. Temple led with 2 minutes left. Memphis is at midfield. They go for it on fourth. Brady White is being dragged down and just sort of chucks it up. And it looks like Joey Magnifico lays out and catches the ball. But for some reason, the officials overturn it. The Owls get the ball back. They win. They seal the deal.
I love the soft spot that you have for Temple, even when you don't believe in them and they scare the living bejesus out of you against Notre Dame.
It's a very real soft spot, yeah.
I like the soft spot. And Temple, don't look now. 5-1 with a new head coach after it's their second new coach of the season. So good for Temple. I don't think they've lost in conference either. Real quickly, Ty, I've got some dudes.
Let me hear him.
Kenneth Murray, Oklahoma, the linebacker, was all over the dang place. I mentioned Puka Nacua, Washington, Lynn Bowden. How do you have this list without him? Malcolm Perry for Navy, all over the place, goes for over 200. Larry Three Sticks, because I want to say his name one more time.
Sure.
All of the Wisconsin defense, Breece Hall for Iowa State. And just because Robert Windsor sounds too official to his friends, he might be Bob. So Bob Windsor, Penn State. It's a shorter list this week because that's just what I felt like. So yeah, a lot of fun dudes all around college football. And should also mention next week, a little light on headliners.
Yeah.
I think Friday is Ohio State Northwestern. We've got Arizona State, Utah. So good quarterback play there. Oregon, Washington, 3:30 Eastern, Baylor, Oklahoma State. And at night it's Michigan, Penn State.
Alrighty, Dan. Well, this has been a fun show. Fun show, fun week. Thank you to everyone who called in. To the Reverb line at 408 Verbal One. We'll reopen that as we progress forward now into all that is week eight. We've got a fun twos cruise planned this week. We've already started charting our course.
No, you nailed it.
For this coming twos cruise. So we're excited about that. We're excited about the week eight preview. Got some funny goose. We got some goose planned for that one as well. Thank you again to everyone who downloaded the show, who supports the show, who follows the show out on Facebook, out on Twitter, out on Instagram, and even those of you crazies who like to team up and talk about the show on the subreddit, solidverbal.reddit.com. We love each and every one of you. Thank you so much for your support. About halfway through the year now, Dan, if you can believe it.
We are. And not only are we halfway through the year, Colgate is 0-7.
Wow. It really was a jinx.
I'm so sorry for the solid verbal stink on you, Colgate. I am so sorry. Georgetown lost at the Hornet's Nest, that is Multisport Field. And my friend Paige was at the game. So now we have a connection to Multisport Field. And Lafayette falls to 0-6 after they just get worked over by Princeton. And we have Lafayette and Colgate playing November 16th. And God help us all.
Is it in Easton?
Still beaten. The game is in Easton.
I might have to go to that.
It looks like it's a 12:30 kickoff.
I might have to go to that.
Why not?
I'll take some pictures. When is it? November
16th.
I might have to go to that.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you again to everyone out there. Dan, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
That's a plan.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much. As always, we'll catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.